I have to start again. We have to pick up in volume 10, January the 28th, 1911. And most of the messages we will be dealing with in this session are about love. I've told you a number of times that the summary of the 36 volumes is divine will and love. Okay, same person we're dealing with. Okay, so I'll give you a whole lot of references to love and then I won't give you any. Is that okay? Because there's only a certain amount and that's it. 1 Corinthians 13, verses 1 to 13. 1 Corinthians 14, verse 1, which says you must want love more than anything else. And I'll give you John 13, 34 to 35. And in the next one, I'll give you another dose. Is that okay?
Yeah.
So the heading for this is that love forces God to tear the veils of faith. As I was in my usual state, Louisa said, the heart of my sweet Jesus made itself seen. And as I looked inside of Jesus, I could see his heart in him. And in looking inside of myself, I could see his most holy heart also within me. So there's your John 14, 20 to 21. You in me and I in you, both completely one. Oh, how much gentleness, how many delights, how many harmonies could be felt in that heart, Louisa said. Then, while I was delighting with Jesus, I heard his most gentle voice coming out from his heart telling me, daughter, delight in my heart. Love wants its outpourings. Otherwise, who could go on, especially one who really loves me and does not admit within herself any other pleasure, any other taste. Now, the book says taste. I think you should put the word satisfaction. Any other satisfaction or any other love. Now, the book says life, but love, any other love. So what Jesus is saying here is that especially for people who really love him. Now, that's your Deuteronomy 6, 4 to 10. Hear, O Israel, the Lord your God is one Lord, and you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, all your mind and all your being. Now, it's the word all that's terribly important, okay? And that's why he said that especially for people who really love God and therefore they don't have other pleasures, they're not looking for something outside of him. They're not looking for any other satisfactions beside God. You remember Teresa of Avila, God alone sufficeth, okay? And they're not looking for any other love. They're not looking for anything outside of love. So Louisa said, I felt so drawn towards them that love itself, now notice the capitals, that's divine love, forces me to tear the veils of faith and I reveal myself. Now, Jesus is saying that if you want to really see him, all you've got to do is love more and more and more deeply and more completely because he is love. And the faith that tells you he is love, gradually, the veil will be drawn back and you will be able to see. Now, whether that seeing is with your eyes or with your interior soul, it's up to him. Most of us get it in the interior. OK. So I feel so drawn to people who love in this way that love itself forces me to tear the veils of faith and I reveal myself, making them enjoy down here also. That means down on earth, paradise at intervals. Now, that is Psalm, I think it is 39. You'd never think I prepared this, would you? And I think it's 9 to 10, that you drink from the torrents of his delight. Okay. But he said, I anticipate heaven also in this life. Now, many of the saints have acknowledged that they experienced heaven on earth. Enjoy, he said, feel my delights. See how many contentments there are. Notice the S, contentments there are in my heart. Take part in everything. pour yourself out in my love so that yours may expand more and you may love me more. Now, there's no limit to love. Love is eternal. And so heaven is a continuous expansion in love. And therefore, the ecstasy of happiness in heaven increases, increases, increases. Well, we would say with time. Of course, it's outside of time. Okay. Now, notice he says that in order to grow in love, we must actually love. Hence, the acts of love that we make, you know, that I love you with your own love in your divine will. Okay. And so if you love him with his own love, and the more often you repeat that, the better. And if you haven't got time to repeat it all day, just say, Lord, I want to multiply this to infinity, to cover everything. I want to apply it to infinity. So in the next paragraph, while Jesus was saying this, Louisa said, I saw some priests. And Jesus continued, my daughter, the church in these times is agonizing, but it won't die. Why is it agonizing? This is 1911. You have the infiltration of communism and Marxism and rationalism and modernism and all the other isms. Okay. She will rise again, even more beautiful. The good priests strive for a life more stripped. Now, more stripped means that they're detached from the things of the earth. More sacrificed, so more self-giving. More pure. Okay, so that's in body, mind and spirit. The bad priests strive for a life more interested, more comfortable and more sensual, all earthly. Well, that goes without saying. One is just the contrast of the other. And Jesus said, I speak, but not to them, not to the bad ones. Why would he not speak to the bad ones? Because they wouldn't hear. And they wouldn't be interested in what he would want to say if he's talking about the cross and self-sacrifice and so on. I speak to the few good ones, be they even one per town. Wow. Considering this is a century ago, it's much worse now, isn't it? To these, that's the good priests, I speak and I command and I beg and I supplicate that they may make these houses of reunion. Now, it came to me, we've had a lot about these houses of reunion, haven't we? It came to me that a more correct way of using that terminology that we would understand is a retreat house. Then you will understand it. Okay. Because I've been saying to the Lord for ages, houses of reunion don't say anything to us. And he said retreat houses too. And it's just that language changes. Okay. So we've had lots of retreat houses set up since then, all over the place. So I beg them to make these retreat houses, okay, saving me the priests who will come into these shelters by rendering them completely free from the bonds of the family. Now, that's specific to Italy. The bonds of the family mean running the family business and so on. And through these few good ones, my church will recover from her agony. These are my support, my pillars. We even use that language, the pillars of the church, don't we? The church has two sets of pillars. One set are the priests and the other set are the families. They're the two pillars of the church. So these are my support, my pillars, the continuation of the life of the church. I do not speak to the others, that is, to those who do not feel like freeing themselves from the bond of the family. In other words, they want to stay in their captivity. They want to stay in their sinfulness. So what's the point in wasting words? Because if I speak, I'm certainly not listened to. Even more, at the mere thought of breaking every bond, they become indignant. Okay. Listen to this now. This is going to be very frightening. Unfortunately, they are accustomed to drinking the cup of vested interest, is what we would say. You'd have to put the word vested interest. And the like, that's all the worldliness that goes with it. And while being sweetness for the flesh, it is poison for the soul. Okay. These will end up drinking the sewer of the world. Now, the sewer of the world is hell. What you pour into a sewer is what are the dregs of human life. Isn't that very frightening?
Yeah.
I want to save them at any cost, but I'm not listened to. Therefore I speak, but for them it is as if I weren't speaking. Now this is true. We know this in our own lives, that the Lord has spoken to the church through many apparitions of our Blessed Lady, through many apparitions of the Sacred Heart, through Sister Faustina, through Padre Pio, and you could go on and on. But who listens? Only a very small group actually listens. It's very frightening, really, you know. It must be awful from his point of view. So there's a short message about priests on February the 4th, 1911. And it's about these retreat houses. So continuing in my usual state, Blessed Jesus said, my daughter, tell Father G to solicit the retreat houses. I'm going to use our language now. Is that okay? Let them not make the persecution come earlier. Woe to them. Now, a persecution coming to the church. And in other words, God would permit it for our chastisement if there's real disobedience to his will. In fact, where these retreat houses will be established, either the persecutions will be milder or wounds will be spared. The rot is great and it is too stinking, and it takes iron and fire by necessity. Iron is for cutting the gangrenous flesh and fire for purifying. Now, that happened in World War One. Yeah. But in World War One, two particular houses that were set up by Maximilian Kolbe in Hiroshima, that they were spared when the atomic bombs came down. And they had absolutely no danger. And a house of Jesuit priests who are saying the rosary every day, they were spared completely as well. So this is what he's saying, that, you know, if we would only respond to the challenge that he's giving to us, he would spare us in time of persecution. Okay. So February the 8th, 1911, we come back to the subject of love. And I want to give you the rest of the references on love, and then that's it, okay? Ephesians 3, 16 to 21. And John 15, 9. Okay. So, continuing my usual state, I spent about 6 days all immersed in the love of my blessed Jesus. Now, in the last message, Jesus told her to pour out her love. That's the way to grow, okay? And so this is what she's saying. She spent almost a week just in the love of Jesus. Can you imagine? To the point that at times I felt I could take no more, and I would say to him, enough, enough, I can't take any more. Now that means that if a jug is full, it's full. You can't take any more. You can have an ocean of liquids, but the jug can't take it. I felt as if I was in a bath of love, she said, that penetrated deep into the marrow of my bones. Jesus would speak to me of love and of how much he loved me, and I would speak of love to him. I don't know how anybody would have the guts to speak of love to him. But anyway, since he is love, and you can't tell him anything he isn't. The beautiful thing is that sometimes Jesus would not let himself be seen. And I, swimming in this bath of love, would feel the circle of my poor nature crack. Now, what she's saying is, the desire to go to heaven is unbearable, because that's what love actually does. It wants to break this bond. And I would lament to him, and he would whisper in my ear, I am love. I am love. If you feel love, it is sure that I am with you. Okay? So that's 1 John 4, 7 to 17. So what he's saying is, in the depths of your being, if you are aware that you are loved by God, that is the sign that he is with you. And you need to take that as a sign of discernment, because we are aware of it, aren't we? Otherwise, you wouldn't be in such good humour. Other times, Louisa said, I would lament, and he would say in my ear, Louisa, you are my paradise on earth, and your love renders me happy. Isn't that absolutely fantastic? Mm-hmm. So he says that Louise's love renders him happy on earth, okay? because she's the only one who loves him to this extent. Okay, others love him at different levels. So Louisa said, "Jesus, my love, what are you saying? Do you want to make fun of me? You are already happy because of yourself. Why do you say that you're happy because of me?" And it's wonderful that she asks these questions, because it's we who need the answer. So Jesus said, "Listen to me very carefully, my daughter, and you will understand what I'm telling you. There is no created thing that does not receive life from my heart." So that's John 1, verses 1 to 5. It's also Colossians chapter 1. And it's John 14, 6. "I am the way, the truth, and the life." So he says, there's not one created thing that doesn't receive life from me. Now, as we go on, he's going to explain very clearly that the divine will is in everything that God has made. The divine will is in the sun, or it wouldn't exist. The divine will is in the plants, or they wouldn't exist. The divine will is in you and me, or we wouldn't exist. If the divine will removes itself, we disintegrate, we go back into nothingness. So there's nothing that doesn't receive life from him. All souls, I'm putting souls instead of creatures, are like many cords that come from my heart and have life from me. By necessity and naturally, everything they do is all reflected in my heart. Now, that requires a little bit of thought. That means everything we do, every thought, every word, every action, every motivation, everything is reflected in him, because he is the source of our life. Be it even one little movement. Isn't that something? Mm-hmm. As a consequence, if they do evil, if they do not love me, they give me continuous bother. That chord resounds in my heart with the sounds of displeasure, of bitterness, of sin, and it forms in it such lugubrious sounds as to render me unhappy on the part of that chord. That's like saying you have a wonderful harp, but there's one chord that is out of tune, and it spoils everything, doesn't it? This discordant note. On the other hand, if it loves me, it is all intent on contenting me, and that chord gives me continuous pleasure. Now you have your harp with all the chords, right? And it forms festive and sweet sounds which harmonize with my whole life. And on the part of that chord, I enjoy so much as to be rendered happy and to enjoy my own paradise because of it. Now, the harp is his, the chords are his, but he still enjoys the music that comes from it. If you understand this well, you will no longer say that I make fun of you. OK. Now, Louisa very seldom goes into an ecstasy of love and tells you what is in her going on inside of her. But we have this is coming up right now, and it's very unusual for her. For St. Thérèse of Lisieux, it was normal. She was very artistic and very musical in herself and needed to express herself this way. For John of the Cross, he expressed himself so incredibly in poetry that his poetry is still studied in the universities because of its magnificent structure and expression and everything else, even with people who don't actually have the union with God that John had. So this eulogy to love is just, you're going to get about two of them, I think, and then Louisa won't give you any more, because it's not like her. She's very private. So in the next paragraph then, Louisa said, "And here's what I would say about love and what Jesus would say." So we're going to get a dialogue here. And this dialogue is like the bride and the bridegroom in the Song of Songs, delighting in each other, okay? I'll say it with some nonsense and maybe disconnected, because the mind does not adapt itself completely to words. So in other words, it's not natural for Louisa to talk like this. So write Louisa before stanza one, okay? And before we talk at all, the heading I have for myself is "It's all about love." And if you don't learn your love sonata on earth, you'll have to learn it in heaven. OK. Song of Songs 2:4, "His banner over me is love." OK, "His banner over me is love." Oh my Jesus, you are love. I have to try and put this into English. Is that okay? Because with the translation, you get the nouns and the adverbs in the wrong places. Oh my Jesus, you are love. You are all love. I want you alone. I desire you alone. I desire and long for love. I supplicate love and I implore love of you. Now, I would imagine in the original Italian, that would all rhyme, you know. Love invites me, she says. Love is my life. That's Song of Songs 5:2. Love kidnaps my heart. I think that's fantastic. Deep into the womb of my Lord. With love he inebriates me. With love he delights me. I all alone and only for you. You alone and only for me. Now notice, you see, this is spousal love. It's completely personal. And it is also, I'm looking for a word now, and the word won't come to me. It absolutely excludes anybody else. It's exclusive love. I got it in the end. It's exclusive love. It's him for me only and I'm for him only. Is that okay? I all alone and only for you and you alone only for me. It's this exclusive spousal love. Now that we are alone, shall we speak about love? Oh, please let me understand how much you love me. Because only in your love can one understand love. Okay. Now notice, love is given, his love is always given with a capital L and her love is given with a small L. Have you noticed that? Mm-hmm. That's important. Now put Jesus beside the next stanza because this 1, 2, 3, 4 stanzas actually is his response. And Jesus says, do you want me to speak to you of love? Listen, my beloved daughter, my life is love. If I breathe, I love you. If my heart beats, my heartbeat says love, love. I am mad with love for you. That's quite strong language, isn't it? If I move, I add love for you. With love, I inundate you. With love, I surround you. With love, I caress you. With love, I dart through you. With love, I flash through you. With love, I attract you. With love, I nourish you. And sharp arrows I send into your heart. Okay. Now, Louise's response is the next number of stanzas. So you put Louise beside it. Enough, O my Jesus, for now. I already feel faint with love. That's Song of Songs 2:5. Song of Songs 2:5. And 5:8. 2:5 and 5:8. Sustain me in your arms, enclose me in your heart. Now, the Song of Songs says, sustain me with apples because I'm fainting with love. An apple, of course, is a symbol of love. Sustain me in your arms because Jesus is love. Enclose me in your heart, and from within your heart, let me too give vent to my love. Otherwise, I will die of love. Now, when she says, I will die of love, you're talking about the ecstasy that love actually brings on. And when we meet together on the 29th, I'll explain to you a wonderful insight that the Lord gave me about Louise's privations, because the assumption of our Blessed Lady is that she went into this ecstasy of love and kept going. She never came back. It's a fantastic thing when you just look at it. But I mean, that's only telling you what I'm going to talk about, if you know what I mean. It's a wonderful thing. That's why Louisa says, I die of love. The soul wants to leave the body and go to love. With love I rave, with love I burn. With love I make feast, with love I languish. With love I am consumed. Love kills me and makes me rise again, more beautiful to new life. Now the love killing her and rising again are the deprivations and his return. Okay. My life escapes me and I feel only the life of Jesus, my love. And in Jesus, my love, I feel immersed and I love everyone. He wounds me with love. He makes me ill with love. With love, he embellishes me and he makes me ever more rich. Now, some of the things that are said there You mightn't remember, but they're in volume 3. Okay. So what you often find is that as you go forward, you get revisions of things that have been said before. So Louisa continues in the next two stanzas. I can say nothing more. O love, you alone understand me. You alone comprehend me. My silence tells you even more. Silence, you see, is the most wonderful form of speech that our present generation knows very little about. In your beautiful heart, one says more by keeping silent. Now, there you have it. Than by speaking. If I can illustrate it with the most obvious illustration on the planet, it's this, that if somebody gives you a kiss on the lips, they shut you up. It's actually not possible to stay talking. Am I right or am I right? So love actually brings two people to silence. And the silence is union. The silence is union. It's the same thing spiritually. Okay. So one says more by keeping silent than by speaking. And by loving, one learns how to love, which is correct, isn't it? Love, love, speak you alone, because being love, you know how to speak of love. Okay, so Jesus responds in 1, 2, 3, 4, the next four stanzas. Do you want to hear love? All creation tells you love. If the stars twinkle, they tell you love. If the sun rises, it gilds you with love. If it shines with all of its light in its full day, it sends arrows of love to your heart. If the sun sets, it tells you it is Jesus that dies of love for you. We'd never think of that, would we?
No.
In thunder and lightning, I send you love, and smacking kisses I give to your heart. It is love that runs upon the wings of the wind. Take the S off it. If the waters murmur, I extend my arms to you. If the leaves move, I clasp you to my heart. If the flower gives you its fragrance, I cheer you with love. Isn't that a most marvelous introduction to the rounds of creation? All creation in mute language tells you in chorus, from you alone do I want the life of love. Love I want, love I desire. For love, I beg from within your heart. I am only content if you give me love. Now, that is true of every human being that has ever lived. We were intended to be conceived in love, to be nurtured in the womb in love, to be born in love, to be raised in love, and when you reach maturity, to be ready to give love to the next generation. The whole thing was meant to be a cycle of love. And that when you reach the fullness of love, that you go back to love, because God is love. It was meant to be that. It would be wonderful if it was, wouldn't it? So, it makes me sad as well. So all creation in mute language, tells you in chorus, it's from you alone that I want the life of love. Okay, so I'm only content if you give me love. Now, Louisa responds. Louisa is great. She always gives him tit for tat. She never lets him have the last word. I think that's completely feminine, is it? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So the last five stanzas are Louisa. She gets the last word. And the point is, he lets her have it, which I think is amazing. My good and my all, insatiable love. If you want love, then give me love. You see, we have nothing. John 15:5. Without him, we have nothing. We're not capable of anything. So we have to keep on asking him to increase his love in us. If you want me happy, then speak to me of love. If you want me content, then render me love. Love invests me. Love makes me fly and brings me to the throne of my maker. Love shows me the uncreated wisdom, which, of course, is Jesus himself. And that comes from the Book of Wisdom. Okay. The Book of Wisdom, and it's chapter 7. Wonderful thing about wisdom there. It leads me into the eternal love, and there I set my throne. Because we're meant to be a little flame of love going back to the fire of love. Life of love. I will live in your heart. I will love you for all. I will love you for all, I will love you for all. And that's the thing that Louisa teaches us, isn't it? Yeah. To love God for everybody. Jesus, seal me completely with love inside of your heart. Now, to be sealed completely with love means all selfishness is dead, gone, over, finished. Empty my veins and instead of blood, let love flow in them. Take away my breath and let me breathe the air of love. Burn my bones and flesh and weave me completely, completely with love. May love transform me. May love conform me, that is, to the image of Christ. May love teach me how to suffer with you. May love crucify me and make me all similar to you. I think it's a fantastic thing. You just need to read it nice and slowly. Okay. So March the 24th, 1911, the soul prays for the needs of the church. Continue in my usual state, Louisa said, my beloved Jesus came, and as I prayed to him for certain needs of the church and for a certain person named, who has given books on hell for publishing. What's going to be here is really extraordinary. So this person has, whoever this B is, has written books on hell, has given them for publishing, okay. And he told me, this is Jesus talking, my daughter, he did nothing but throw himself even more into the mud. In other words, he doesn't know a brass farthing about hell. So don't believe everything that's written, okay. Any mind of healthy reason will see immediately what a cretin he is, and how I have caused him to hallucinate, not placing any true force of reason in what he affirms. Isn't that something else? I don't want priests to bother reading it. This is fascinating to me. And if they do, they will render themselves too vile, and they will descend from their dignity as though wanting to pay attention to the nonsense of a child, and therefore giving him the field to do even more nonsense. So if you give him attention, he'll get more. Isn't that interesting? But by not bothering about him and not paying attention to him, they will at least give him the sorrow that no one pays attention to what he does and that no one appreciates him. They will answer with the worthy works of their ministry. This is the most beautiful answer. Isn't that something else? To him then, it will happen that he will fall into the very trap he's preparing for others. He'll be hung on his own petard. So you're not told what the purpose of writing these books was, but it looks as if somebody was writing something in a twisted way to get people involved in the occult. You know, so you tell them something macabre and you kind of draw them in through fear and fascination and all the rest of it. Jesus says, don't touch. I think it's fascinating, his response there. So March the 26th, 1911 is about love again. This morning I was outside of myself, Louisa said, and I saw the celestial mother with the baby in her arms. The divine baby called me with his little hand, and I flew to put myself on my knees before the Queen Mother, and Jesus told me, my daughter. Now, I always loved that image. He's an infant and he's talking to her, my daughter. So all the language is adult. And yet she sees an infant. My daughter, today I want you to speak with our mother. Notice the our. And Louisa said, my celestial mother, tell me, is there anything in me that displeases Jesus? And she said, dearest daughter of mine, be tranquil. Now, Jesus has spent 10 volumes trying to tell her to be tranquil. For now, I don't see anything that may displease Jesus. Now, I want you to notice the for now bit. Mm-hmm. Because human beings can change hour by hour. If, may it never be, you will run into something that can displease him, I will let you know immediately. Look at that for mercy. Mm-hmm. Trust your mother and do not fear. As the celestial queen assured me, I felt new life being infused into me. And I added, my most sweet mother, what sad times we are living in. Tell me, is it really true that Jesus wants this retreat houses of priests? Now, I think this is fascinating. Louisa gets a message directly from Jesus, and she has a doubt box in the back of her head. And so as soon as she meets Our Lady, she says, is he serious? And she said, he surely does want it, because the waves are rising too high, and these retreat houses will be the anchors, the lamps, the helm with which the church will be saved from shipwreck. Isn't that interesting? Caused by the storm. Now, the storm is all this invasion of communism and Marxism and materialism and all the rest of it. In fact, while it will appear that the storm has submerged everything, after the storm, it will be seen that the anchors, the lamps, the helm, that is the most stable things in order to continue the life of the church, are still there. Now, very often in the ancient world, when storms and terrible things like war and everything happened, when it was all over and buildings were destroyed, you had the pillars of the building still standing. We still have them standing to this very day. And that's why people wanted to put their names on pillars, because it would be everlasting, you know. And that's what he's saying, that these because they will be according to his will, they will remain, and therefore the church can thrive again. Almost none of them move while these are times for works. So he's saying they don't feel any sense of urgency. We have the same thing today, don't we? They don't seem to have the urgency of the times, and yet it is the time for works. The enemies are not resting while they remain in sluggishness. Now, that reminds me of the apostles asleep in Gethsemane when the salvation of the world was being determined. Okay. But so much the worse for them, he said. What you cannot get priests to take on board is that privilege is one thing, responsibility is quite another. Okay. And then Blessed Mother added, my daughter, try to make up for everything by means of love. Look at that. Love is the most powerful thing in the universe. May you cherish one thing alone, and that is to love. Just one thought, one word, or one life, love. Everything just love. In your words, your thoughts, your whole life. If you want to content and please Jesus, love him. And give him always the occasion to speak of love. This is the only relief that cheers him. Love. Tell him to speak to you of love, and you will put him in feast. Okay. I had something in my head when I was reading that, and it's gone now. It'll come back. The only thing that will content him is love. We have got to completely concentrate that love is the center, and love is the only motive for anything that we do. And to love him in the divine will with his own love is the most powerful weapon you can use to intercede for the church and the world. Okay. So Louisa said, my tender Jesus, did you hear what our mother is saying, as if he couldn't hear everything? That I should ask you for love and to speak about love. And Jesus, celebrating, said such and so many things about the virtue, the height. That is the summit. When they say height, you mean summit, like the summit of sanctity, okay? Whereas for us, height could be anything. It could be 3 feet and it could be a mountain, you know? So the summit, the nobility of love, that is not for the human language to be able to repeat it, and therefore I stop, okay? So I want to give you 1 Corinthians 2:9 there, that the eye cannot see and the ear cannot hear and the heart cannot understand the great things that God has prepared for those who love him. So May the 16th, 1911. Jesus doesn't want to confound the enemies of the church, and he cries over the painful wounds that are in the body of the church. So Louisa said, I was praying, Blessed Jesus, to confound the enemies of the church. Now, she was asking him to do it. And my beloved Jesus, in coming, told me, my daughter, I could confound the enemies of the Holy Church, but I don't want to. Why? Because he loves them and he wants to save them. And he would prefer that they would turn around to truth and beauty and so on. If I did so, who would purge my church? I want you to really colour that if you use colour. Who would purge my church? You see, it's the people who are disaffected with the church, it is the people who have gone into apostasy. is the people who hate the church, they are the ones who will fight against it and cause it pain and distress and even persecute it and even cause martyrdom, but they're the ones who purify the church. I hate to say it, but they're God's little helpers. And, you know, we like using that expression, but we like using it in a different context. The people who cause us trouble, the people who make our lives uncomfortable, the people who think we're nothing and really challenge us are also God's little helpers in our lives to produce virtue in us. Okay. So that's the parable of the tares and the wheat in Matthew 13. Okay. The members of the church, and especially those who occupy positions and heights of dignity. Now notice heights. Now the height of dignity isn't the priest, it's the bishop and the cardinal and the pope. And those who occupy positions and heights of dignity have their eyes dazzled and they blunder a great deal. Now, this is Jesus talking. If any, the rest of us said it, we'd be accused of all kinds. But he knows. They blunder a great deal, reaching the point of protecting the false virtuous and oppressing and condemning the truly good ones. Isn't that interesting? Now, that would be because they're blinded by the philosophy of communism and Marxism and their own materialism. And so they're looking at other people with jaundiced eyes. Okay. This grieves me so much, Jesus said, to see those few true children of mine under the weight of injustice, those children from whom my church must rise again. Look at that. Mm-hmm. And to whom I am giving such grace as to dispose them to do this. I see them placed with their backs to the wall. Look at his language. I thought we were the only ones that used that kind of language. And bound to prevent their step. This grieves me so much that I feel I'm all fury for their sake. Okay. Whereas if the leaders of the church did the right thing, Jeremiah 29:11 would happen. If you seek me with all your heart, I would let you find me. Okay. So you put a CF there. In other words, go and compare this. So then Jesus continued, my daughter, I am all sweetness, benign, clement and merciful. So much so that because of my sweetness, I enrapture hearts. Now, Louisa keeps on saying that. But I am also strong and I'm able to crush and I'm able to reduce to ashes those who not only oppress the good, but reach the point of preventing the good which they want to do. Now that's Revelation 11:18. Revelation 11:18. I will destroy the destroyers of the earth. Very strong, isn't it? You cry over the secular. Now the secular means they're not priests, they're laity and they're the people in society, okay? And I cry over the painful wounds that are in the body of my church. Now, he's talking about the priests and the bishops and the cardinals. These grieve me so much as to surpass the wounds of the secular world, because they come from the side from which I did not expect it. And they induce me to make the worldly secular rail against them. Now, it's 1911. I don't know the exact dates, but they, do you remember they took the Papal States off the church and the Pope had to become a prisoner in the Vatican for ages. Now, the Lord allowed what is called the secular or the worldly people to punish the church. He actually allowed it. So May 19th, 1911, and we're having another one of these keys. Someday I'll talk about keys. This is the key of confidence. Continue in my usual state, my beloved Jesus made himself seen all afflicted, and I was around him all intent on sympathizing with him, loving him, embracing him and consoling him with all the fullness of confidence. Now, Louisa gets us to do that in the intercessions in the hours of the Passion. Okay. And my sweet Jesus told me, my daughter, you are my contentment. I like it this way, that the soul forgets about herself, about her miseries, and occupies herself only with me. Now, that means that we're not looking at our faults and our failings and our struggles and our this and that and the other. We're looking at him and we're loving him. And you grow much faster that way. She occupies herself only with me, with my afflictions and my bitterness, with my love, and she remains around me with all confidence. Now, the perfect example of that is Saint Therese. This confidence captures my heart. Saint Therese said, "You will receive from God exactly what you have the confidence to receive from him." This confidence captures my heart. It inundates me with so much joy that just as the soul forgets all of herself for me, I forget everything for her. Now, Jesus says that to Louisa every now and then, that, look, I have left all the stuff I'm supposed to be doing in the world and I'm just going to give my attention to you. I forget everything for her. And I make her one single thing for me. That means the complete union. And I reach the point of not only giving her, but of letting her take whatever she wants. Now, the saints who have reached divine union have all said that, that the Lord allows you to take from him whatever you want, because after all, you're one with him. That's like saying there is money in the family and you're allowed to take what you want. On the other hand, to the soul that does not forget everything for me, even her miseries, and who, if she wants to be around me, does so with all respect, with fear and without confidence that captures my heart, as though wanting to be with me with fearful restraint and all circumspect, to this one I give nothing. Isn't that interesting? Mm-hmm. Now notice the distance there is between this person and the Lord. Because there's this fearful reaction. Somebody only told me within the last week that the motivation that he had for all of his long life, and it is a long life, was fear of hell. I said, "You poor soul. Let's talk to you about the love of God. Love is such a much, much liberating thing than the fear of hell." You know. Now the fear of hell, that's a very old thing, very ancient. Now this person is old as well. Do you know what I mean? But I couldn't believe that he hadn't shifted from that position. Mm. You know, it is, yeah. I give nothing to that person, he said, and she, that's the soul, can take nothing because the key of confidence is missing. The key of ease. You're supposed to be at ease with the Lord and feel that you're at home with him. The key of simplicity is missing. That's the simplicity of a child, putting their arms around their father or mother and just loving them to the point where the father or mother would jump over ditches of stirabout and bogs of buttermilk to get whatever the kid was looking for. These are all necessary things in order for me to give. Now, that is the key of confidence, the key of ease, the key of simplicity, and for her to be able to receive. And so she comes with miseries and she goes with miseries. Isn't that sad? Mm-hmm. So she has her sort of religious experience, like going to Mass on Sunday, and she comes out as bad as she went in. I think that's extremely sad. Whereas Saint Therese of Lisieux said that every single time she received communion, she was aware of growing in holiness. Now, I've never come across anybody else among the saints who said that every time. And I don't know if that puts you into a different box. It puts me into a different box. Every time she received Holy Communion. Okay. So May the 24th, 1911. What God is by nature, the soul is by grace. This is just totally fascinating. Okay. And I want to give you Psalm 82, verse 6. Psalm 82, verse 6. I said you are gods, all of you, sons of the Most High. Also want to give you, Louisa said, I was thinking of the incomprehensible greatness and wisdom of God. Now she's literally quoting Romans 11, 33 to 36. The incomprehensible greatness and wisdom of God. Incomprehensible is that no matter how much you grow, no matter how much sanctity you have, he's infinite and we're finite. Romans 11:33-36. So I was thinking of the incomprehensible greatness and wisdom of God, who in giving his goods to us does not decrease in anything. Just because the sun gives us light, the sun doesn't become dark. It doesn't lose anything. On the contrary, it seems that by giving, he acquires the glory that the creature gives him for having received the goods of the Lord. It's in giving that you receive, okay? And those of us who teach know that it is in teaching that you learn. Actually, the teacher learns more than anybody in the class. It's the amazing thing. And blessed Jesus in coming told me, my daughter, you too possess this quality, not in your body, but in your soul, which was communicated to you by my goodness. In fact, by trying to infuse good, virtue, love, patience, sweetness into souls, you lose nothing at all. In other words, by trying to help others, you actually gain, you don't lose. On the contrary, by infusing them in others, if you see that they take advantage of them, you enjoy a greater satisfaction, which is true. And the teacher feels that as well, don't they? So that which you are by grace in your soul, I am by nature. So that's Psalm 8:5. You've made us little less than a god and crowned us with glory and honour. Psalm 8:5. And not only for the goods of the virtues, but all possible goods, natural and spiritual, of any kind. Someday it might dawn on you just what God is offering to you. Most of us just can't take it on board. And we just take it just piece by piece. But the whole treasure seems to dazzle us to the point where you can't actually take it in. Unfortunately, June 7, 1911, we're back to priests again. Going through most bitter days of privation of my adorable Jesus, I was praying him to deign to come. And he came just like a flash and he told me, love that is hidden, whoa. Interesting. You see, if you have love, you can't hide it. You must share it. Love demands an expression. You know that, don't you? And love that is unrequited, that is, there's no response back to you, is agony. Okay, so he says love that is hidden, whoa. Then as I was praying him for the church and for pity on many souls who become lost because they want to wage war against the church and for his ministers, Jesus said, my daughter, do not afflict yourself. It is necessary that the enemies purge the church. Now, that was introduced a few passages back. And after they have purged her, the patience, the virtues of the good will be light for the enemies. Look at the way God works. In the Second World War, you had Maximilian Kolbe being such a shining light in Auschwitz. Do you remember the Germans? No, you don't. But there's one particular German that we have remembered, and that is the commandant in the concentration camp, who at the end of his life absolutely turned and confessed his sins. Absolutely. And you can get it on the internet. So the saint becomes light for others. So you had Edith Stein and her sister Rosa, and they were able to give light to everybody else. She was able to say, let us sacrifice ourselves for our people. So she's able to give everybody else a motive. Their lives are going to be taken, but it's much better to give it. Okay. And so you have these saints having an extraordinary effect on others. So the deeper the crisis goes, the higher the sanctity of the Holy Ones goes. And therefore the church is raised again, right out of the mud and put on the pedestal again. That's the way the Lord works. So the patience and the virtues of the good will be light for the enemies. That's Matthew 5:17. Matthew 5:17. And watch this. And both one and the other will be saved. Mm-hmm. The persecutors get into heaven because the martyrs pray for them. We had a wonderful example of a group of French monks in Morocco who were martyred somewhere in the middle of the 20th century. I remember reading the letter of the abbot before they died. It was absolutely incredible. They all offered themselves to the Lord, and they were taken and they were all beheaded, you know. But the extraordinary thing is that is the seed in Morocco, that Morocco will come to Christ. Because they went there to testify to the Moroccan people about Christ, and they were mostly martyred. I think there was two members of the community that weren't martyred. One of them because he was away doing business and came back and found all his community dead. And the other one was so brave that he hid under a bed and the persecutors couldn't find him. Because they never thought of looking under a bed for a monk. But the glory is with the ones who gave their lives.
Yes. There's a film made about that.
Was there?
Yeah, very, very, very successful film.
Oh, good.
It was in the lighthouse in Smithfield for a long time.
Oh, good.
Terrific film.
Oh, good. So you can see, therefore, that the Lord works at both ends of the line. And the people who seem to be heading straight for hell are the very ones who will be saved. Now, one of the things that abbot said to the men who were going to behead them is, "We will wait for you at the gates of heaven."
Oh, my God.
You see, that's the triumph. That's total triumph. "We will wait for you at the gates of heaven." And St. Stephen, the very first martyr, said to Paul, the one responsible for his death, "I will wait for you on the roads to Christ." Oh, and did Stephen get his prayer answered? Paul was knocked off his horse. Yeah. You know, fantastic stuff. And sometimes it's the worst ones who will have the greatest conversions. It's really amazing. So I want to give you 1 Timothy 2, 4. God wants everyone to be saved. Okay. And so what appears a great evil, God can bring good out of evil. Okay. So Louisa said, "But at least don't permit that." Watch this now. This is, to me, this is terribly important for the time we're living in. Louisa said, "At least don't permit that the faults of your ministers become known to the secular." In other words, hide their sins. Isn't that the very reason why the church is being persecuted now? "Otherwise, they will afflict the church even more. And Jesus said, 'My daughter, do not pray me because I become indignant.'" This is not the way you should think, okay? "I want this matter to come out." How's that? So I want to give you Mark 3, 1 to 6. Mark 3, 1 to 6. And I want to give you Matthew 10, 26. Why would Jesus want the matter to come out? Because if it's kept hidden, it will fester and get worse and worse and worse, which is what has happened in the last 50 to 60 years. Okay. And then you have an even worse scandal at the other end of it. Okay. But if it's brought out in the beginning, it's like a wound that is lanced, healed over, and you get on with life. So he said, "I want this matter to come out. I can take no more. I can take no more," he said. The sacrileges are enormous. Now, I've already explained to you the origin of these sacrileges, because some of the men are just communist plants. Do you remember? And they brought homosexuality into the priesthood. And of course, therefore, the masses are sacrileges. "By covering them," that's hiding them, "I would give them the field to commit even greater evils. You will have patience in bearing my absence," he said. "You'll do it as a heroine. I want to trust you who are my daughter while I occupy myself with preparing the scourges that the secular are arranging for the priests." And he's doing this for the sake of releasing the priests from the problems that they're in and getting them to live a more healthy life. Now, notice that all of a sudden Jesus says something to Louisa that Louisa would find very unacceptable if it was given in a different context. He said, "You will have patience in bearing my absence." Now, no more complaints. OK, "You will do it as a heroine." That means you can't say, "Oh, I'm dying, I'm dying." You know, she usually does. OK, so he gets his as we would say, his speaking, just at the moment when there is something really serious talking here. So my summary of those lines is the truth will out. But you remember Jesus said that what has been done in secret will be shouted from the housetops. And I'm afraid the sins of the clergy around the world are shouted from the housetops in the social media and the internet. Okay. And the problem there is that the whole world knows then. So June the 21st, 1911, again, we're talking about love, and I have a VIP on this one. There's no sanctity if the soul does not die in Jesus. Notice there's no sanctity. I want you to ring the no. I was thinking of the Celestial Mother when she was holding my beloved Jesus lifeless in her arms, of what she did and how she occupied herself with Jesus. And a light accompanied by a voice in my interior. So the light is infused knowledge. The voice is an interior locution. Okay. Said, my daughter, love acted powerfully in my mother. You see, if she's in the divine will, she's in love. Okay. Love consumed her completely in me, in my wounds, in my blood, in my very death. And it made her die in my love. Now, the church has always said that Blessed Mother is the Queen of Martyrs. Okay. And my love, consuming her love and the whole of my mother, made her rise again with new love. So there's the death and resurrection at work in us. That is all from my love, capital L for divine love. So her love made her die, and my love, divine love, made her rise again to a life that was all in me, of a greater sanctity and fully divine. Now, that's what the Protestants don't want to even touch with a 40-mile rod, that the love that operated in her was fully divine, because she was living at that level. She was living in the divine will. Therefore, there is no sanctity if the soul does not die in me. Now, this dying is dying to self, okay? You die to self, and you die to all the, you die to sin, and you die to miseries and all of that, okay? And all of that dying stuff is in volumes 1-4. Is that okay, in case you need a revision? There's no true life if she does not consume all of herself in my love. Now, I want you to ring the true. There's no true life. You haven't got the real thing if you don't allow yourself to be consumed completely in love. Now, notice there's no option. You either stay the way you are with self and the world and miseries and blah, 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 or you let that all go and you take on divine love and take on divine will. So there's a huge challenge there for people to step up to the mark. So June the 23rd, 1911, this is another VIP one on love. And you're going to be told that there's no baggage allowance on the way to heaven. Love is the only thing you can take. So I won't give you the references to love because you have them all. As I was in my usual state, Blessed Jesus came for just a little and he told me, my daughter, love is not subject to death. Why? Notice it's a capital L. It's divine love. It's eternal. There's no power. There are no rights over love. That's why people misunderstand that statement of St. Augustine, love God and do what you like. Okay. And they think it is sort of be a good religionist and then, you know, be as selfish as you want. There are no rights over love. Love is eternal. Now, but St. Paul will tell you in the references to love that no law can hold love. Love is completely superior to law. Love is eternal. And one who loves is eternal with me. If I can put it this way, the more you love, the more substance of heaven you have inside of you. If you've reached the perfection of love, then heaven exists inside of you with no dilution, and you're ready to go. And if you die in that condition, then you go straight up, because all the dying and the purifying and everything is over. Love fears nothing. You see, Paul tells you all that in 1 Corinthians 13. Love doubts about nothing, and love converts evils themselves into love. Okay? Now, how can you convert evil into love? And that is Maximilian Kolbe and people like him transforming the place of their punishment into a divine place. Okay? And converting their enemies as well. So, love converts evils themselves into love. I myself am love. That's your 1 John 4:7-17. I myself am love. And you remember in the early volumes he said, I am grace as well. I am faith, I am hope, I am love. Okay. I love so much one who loves me in everything. That's your Deuteronomy 6:4-10 again. And one who does everything out of love. Now, St. Therese got her PhD there. She did literally everything. And it was St. Therese who said that if you pick up a pin off the floor with pure love for God, it's worth all the projects on the planet. We're inclined to only put value if something is big and huge and costs an immense amount of money. It's all interior. The value is all interior. So I love so much one who loves me in everything and who does everything out of love. Woe to those who touch him. Oh, now I've forgotten this a number of times. There's a text in the Old Testament that says, touch not my anointed. Okay. Touch not my anointed, and to my prophets do no harm. I'm writing it down myself because I keep forgetting it. Let me write it down. So, touch not my anointed, and to my prophets do no harm. I'll find the reference and give it to you. Okay. But I have remembered it and forgotten it too often, so I'm writing the text down. And Jesus says, woe to those who touch them. Because someone living this divine love is the most precious to Jesus. Okay. I will make them be burned by the fire of my terrible justice. That's the other side of Christ. His love is just. It's not just merciful. Okay. So if somebody would touch his treasures, he's not going to take that. Isn't that interesting? So love is just. And justice is loving. So July 2nd, 1911, this is another VIP one on love. Wherever there's love, there's life. But we used to sing that in Latin, Ubi caritas et amor Deus ibi est. Remember? Mm-hmm. Ubi caritas et amor Deus ibi est. It was one of the very favourite tunes you would sing at benediction or at a holy hour. Where there is love and charity, there is God. Okay, and that's what they're going to say here as well. Because God is love. Continuing in my usual state, blessed Jesus came for just a little and he told me, my daughter, wherever love is, there is life. Now notice life is with the capital L. That means there is God. And not human life, but divine life. So there is God. So you can intersperse God and life there. Therefore, all the works, also good ones, which are not done out of love, are like painted fire. Now, a painted fire doesn't keep you warm in the winter, which gives no heat, or like painted water, which won't do anything for your thirst. It quenches no one's thirst and does not purify. Oh, how many painted or dead works are done also by persons consecrated to me. Isn't that sad? Mm. In fact, love alone is that which contains life. No other thing contains as much power to give life to everybody. Or rather, without love, everything's dead. So, God is love, God is life. If love is there, life is there. If love is not there, the thing is dead. Okay. Have you ever received a present from someone and you knew that they had to sort of give it to you? There was no love in it. Yeah, it's awful. And you're not complimented. You don't even want to open the darn thing.
That's right. Yeah. Be a cheerful giver.
No, the content is love. And so a person could give you something that's actually quite expensive, but they're doing it for themselves. Do you know what I mean? It's for their own image or whatever it is. And a child will come along and pull your favourite flower and not even pull it properly and come in and say, Daddy, I love you. And you couldn't pay for it because that's coming straight from the heart. And they're giving you what you know is precious. Like if it was me now, they'd bring in a rose, okay? They'd know that I would prize that more than anything else. And that's what you're looking at, is that the child went to find a sign to put on their little words. Now that's worth everything, as you know, your parents, you know. But something that's not given with love has no value at all, you know. I remember having to try and help to heal a person whose parents kept on giving her material things but never gave her love. She was a wreck when I met her, an absolute wreck, and had no motivation to live or anything. She came to me in a suicidal bid. And I kept her for 9 months, the gestation period. And then sent her out when she had been born again. Okay. So September the 6th, 1911. One who pays attention to herself grows thin and emaciated. Now, actually, the image he's going to give you here is anorexia nervosa. Okay. The one who's always looking in the mirror and I'm too fat, so they won't eat. And I'm still too fat and they're getting thinner by the day and then they become seriously ill. Now he's saying that for us to look at ourselves all the time and to keep examining ourselves and our miseries and everything, that you've got spiritual anorexia nervosa. Because if I give you anorexia nervosa, you know what he's actually saying. So self-absorption is the absolute worst disease in spiritual life. I'm not talking about sin, I'm talking about a disease. It continues almost the same way, Louisa says. That is, with most bitter privation and with silence. That means Jesus is chastising. At most, he only makes himself seen and it's usually about the usual things, and therefore I don't write them. The usual things, of course, are all the chastisements and what's going on in the world. Now, when you get to the higher volumes, Louisa won't get away with that. She has to write everything. I mean, look at some of these messages here are only a few lines. When you get up over volume 20, you can have 3 or 4 foolscap pages as one message. The Louisa up there is completely changed. Okay. So I remember that when I emit some laments about my state, he tells me, my daughter, have patience, do this as a stalwart, as a heroine. He's trying to tell her. Now, that's twice he's told her. Recently, courage, let me chastise for now and then I'll come as before. Now, the next paragraph, I have a heading, looking for trouble. I also remember that as I was concerned about my state, now he doesn't want her concerned about her state, but she keeps coming back to it. He told me, my daughter, one who wants to pay attention to difficulties and doubts to herself, it's like those fussy persons who feel disgust for everything, and instead of thinking about nourishing themselves, they think of the rubbish, even if it's not there, and therefore they grow thin and emaciated and they die. Anorexia nervosa. Isn't it interesting? But there are people suffering from spiritual anorexia nervosa. for example, they'll want to go back for the 10th time to confess a sin that they committed 20 years ago. And at what point are they going to accept forgiveness and just put it behind you, you know? And then she says some little things I don't remember well. So In the next section, we're going to be dealing with apostasy in Italy and France. Because you know the Enlightenment began in France, and therefore France is really responsible for all this communism that's come to us. People don't think of that. They say communist and they say Russia, but Russia wasn't the source of it. Okay? France brought in the secularism and the materialism and the atheism to us when they absolutely rejected the church in the so-called French Revolution. This morning, Louisa said, I was outside of myself and I found baby Jesus in my arms crying so very strongly because he heard that they wanted to cast him away from Italy. This is apostasy. See, Louisa gets it in very simple images. We made our way towards France and they didn't want to receive him. You see the apostasy in France. Now, he's going to tell her that both France and Italy will be severely punished in the two world wars. And you know that yourself if you know the history of the world wars. And my always lovable Jesus crying said, everyone drives me away, nobody wants me, and I, forced by themselves, will scourge them. Okay, now I have only added two words, including Ireland. We're at the stage where we've also thrown them out. By we, you mean the nation. You're not talking about individuals. In the meantime, I saw roads full of rocks and fire with great damage to the cities. In other words, she's seeing World War One. Okay. Do you see? Let us retreat, my daughter. Let us retreat, he said. And so we retreated into my bed and he disappeared. Then after a few days, as I was praying him to placate himself because of the many scourges that one hears about, he told me, my daughter, they treat me like a dog. And I make them kill one another like dogs. Isn't that crazy? Mm-hmm. In other words, if the great commandment is given to you like this, you have to love God and love your neighbour. Now, after the fall of Adam, when they broke the covenant with God, the very next thing you hear is murder. You break the covenant with God. In chapter 3 of Genesis, you have your first murder in chapter 4. We are not capable of being civil to each other unless there's love of God in us. That's why Jesus put those two commandments as the two commandments on which the entire scriptures hinge, that you must love God and your neighbour. Okay? And so what he says here is, if they treat God like a dog, obviously, he's not thinking of dogs that are domesticated and made like pets at home. He's not talking about that at all. He's talking about dogs being treated as animals that are not tamed, okay, and they're just treated badly. And he said they will treat one another the same way as well. I find that very amazing. So Louisa said it was terrible heartbreak. So let's come to October the 6th and we'll do this one and then stop. So on October the 6th, we're told that we can do everything with Jesus. That's Philippians 4:13. Okay. Louisa says, I was thinking to myself, how is it possible that blessed Jesus, in order to chastise people, has to deprive me of his lovable presence? Now, that's been answered endlessly. I presume you don't need an explanation. I would like to see whether he does this to other souls to make themselves seen. I believe that these are excuses, she says, or that it's something in me which prevents him from coming. Now, he's told her endlessly that's not so. And Jesus just barely making himself seen, my daughter, it really is true that I do not come because of the chastisement. Now, he's being very patient with her. In other words, if you've got to be told 10 times something that's perfectly obvious, you know, the person's being rather patient with you. And suppose, if you'd like, if I go to somebody else, this says nothing. Everything is in the state that the souls have reached through my grace. Okay? In other words, if you're a victim soul, you're a victim soul whether I'm present or absent. Let's put it this way. If you're married, you're married whether the spouse is with you at this moment or not. And even if you're in two different countries at a particular point because somebody's on holidays or on retreat, you're still married. Okay, because that's your state. And Louisa has to try and take this on board, that whether she has sufferings or not, she's still in the state of a victim soul. So, for example, he said, if I went to the soul of a beginner or has not reached the possession of me, they've not reached union with God. Possession of him is union with God. Write union with God over that. Union with God. And they've not reached union with God, as if I were all her own. She would do little or nothing to me. Naturally, they're only beginners, so they don't even really know him. She'd not have that daring, that confidence to disarm me and to bind me as she pleases, because these are all timid before me, and with reason, because they haven't really entered properly into the relationship, because they've not entered into me as the owners, so as to be able to dispose as they wish. On the other hand, when the soul has reached the point of possessing me, that's union with God, she is daring and she is confident. She knows all the divine secrets. Look at that, all the divine secrets. And with reason, she can say to me, if you are mine, I want to do what I want. Because that's what St. Augustine said, love God and do what you like. And this is why I hide to be able to act, because they would suffer greatly in uniting with me to chastise. So they would prevent me from doing it. Here, my daughter, is the necessity that I do not manifest myself to you. Otherwise, I want to hear it from you yourself. What would you do to me? How much would you not be opposed? And Louisa said, certainly, Lord, I would have to stick to all that you yourself have taught me. In other words, I have to stick with my job as a victim soul. I have to love the creatures as your images. That's Romans 8:19. And as yourself, you must love your neighbour as yourself, okay? Now, if I could see you as before, you would never be able to... If I could see you as before, you would never be able to permit the war in Italy. But you hide, and I remain as nothing, pure nothing. Now, my heading over this little paragraph is nothingness. With you, I can do everything. Without you, I can do nothing. Now, you know your two references, don't you? John 15:5, without me, you can do nothing. And then Philippians 4:13, you can do all things in Christ. And Jesus said, you see, you say it yourself. So if I came to you, the war would be reduced to a game. While my will is for it to bring sad and grave consequences. Now, look at that clearly, that God permits war, because there are things that will happen through war that won't happen any other way. Therefore, I repeat to you my refrain, courage, be at peace, be faithful to me. Don't act like a child who fusses over everything. Is that interesting? You've never said to a spouse, would you stop fussing? But be like a heroine, he says. That means someone who bravely takes everything. I do not really leave you. It's not possible, because the Blessed Trinity indwells our souls. And if the divine will left us, we would disintegrate. So I don't really leave you, as 1 Corinthians 3:16. Know you not that you are the temple of the living God and the Spirit of God dwells in you. But I will remain hidden in your heart. Now, in all the volumes that will come after this, you'll hear her saying, he came out from within my heart. He came out from within my heart. And you will continue to live in my will. And if we don't do it so, the people will reach such excess, okay, as to strike terror and fright. Now notice the we, because Louise is living in the divine will, and somehow she has to conform somehow to the divine will. He said, if we don't do this, the people will reach such an excess that it'll be utterly frightful. Now, when you consider World War I, the war to end all wars, and he says that it could have been infinitely worse than that, makes you think. I'm going to stop there.